Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. There are many national issues where Vermont has taken a leadership role, but developing a process to deal with conflicts of interest within state government is not one of them. In fact, in 2012, the Center for Public Integrity gave Vermont an overall grade of D+ in this area because Vermont is one of three states that does not have an ethics commission or clear guidelines defining conflict of interest for state and local officials. Does Vermont need an ethics commission? How would members be appointed? What real authority should the commission have? These are some of the questions we have for our guest today, Secretary of State Jim Condos. Stowe Representative Heidi Sherman, who is a sponsor of a House bill that deals with this issue, and also Washington County Senator Anthony Polina, who also has a draft bill dealing with an ethics commission. Great to have you all here on the program today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
You can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. You can give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Do you think Vermont needs an ethics commission, or perhaps not? If the state does need one, how should these independent members be appointed? What kind of jurisdiction should they have? And would the adoption of this kind of commission actually discourage people from entering politics? Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net or give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. Secretary Condos, some people listening today might be thinking, why does Vermont need an ethics commission? Vermont is not New Jersey. People always act here with good intentions. So what's the case? Why does Vermont need an ethics commission?
Well, first, Bob, let's put it out on the table. Vermont is one of three or four states that does not have an independent ethics commission. We're the only state in New England, or the northeast of the United States, that does not have an ethics commission. And by and large, I would say the vast majority of our elected officials and municipal officials are diligent, hardworking, and really doing the job and focused on making the lives better for the people that they work for, that they're elected to serve. But even little things that might go wrong can create havoc in the long run. And Vermonters do deserve good government. And the only way to get good government is to have an open and transparent government.
So in your mind, does this legislation need to include a clear definition of what conflict of interest is, perhaps some financial disclosure requirements of candidates and elected officials, and also the creation of this ethics panel to review complaints?
Yes, yes, and yes. I think you have to have a code of conduct or code of ethics, and of part of that will be a clear definition of what a conflict of interest is. I am also in favor of having financial disclosure for all candidates, not just the elected officials, but anybody that's running for office at the legislative or statewide level. And I think that this ethics commission could handle campaign finance violations, move it over from the AG's office for investigation and resolution at the ethics commission. I'm also pushing for and hope that the legislature will finally enact that this commission would also handle municipal, and from that, when I say municipal, it would also handle public access and open meeting questions. I've been, since 2011, when I was first elected, asking for an ombudsman to actually deal with that. New York State has it. Massachusetts has it. Connecticut has an ombudsman that handles open meeting questions and access to public records questions. So those are pieces of it that I think can be an important part.
Representative Sherman, why do you think Vermont needs an ethics commission? Do you think some questionable things are actually taking place right now, or is this more proactive for the future?
Well, certainly some situations have arisen in recent years that sparked my interest in it, in the creation of such a commission and such a code of conduct of sorts. But it's not... not accusing anybody of doing anything illegal or untoward. It's simply, I've been in politics a long time, and perception is reality. And there's a lot of distrust right now from the general public in government and in politicians. And if we can do something at the state level to instill more confidence in our elected officials and government in general, I think that would be a good thing. Vermont is a small state. We're accessible as politicians and public servants. But it doesn't necessarily mean that transparency and accountability are there. I think by establishing a code of conduct and ensuring that the people of Vermont know, have confidence that elected officials are not gaining anything financially from their positions is important. Absolutely.
I mean, right now, the legislature has some rules about conflict of interest when people vote on legislation. Do you think that those rules are being closely followed?
Well, again, the rules are actually self-governing. They're self-policing rules. It's Rule 71 or Rule 72, I think, in the House and Senate. And that is that if you feel that there is a conflict, a personal conflict that you have with that piece of legislation that's being voted upon, that you you recuse yourself from that vote. Again, it's self-policing. I think people would really, I think to instill the confidence I'm talking about, you need to have an entity to go to. If you do have questions about, if you do have an inquiry, if you have questions about something that may have happened, and I think that's appropriate.
Senator Plino, why do you think Vermont needs an ethics commission?
Well, first of all, I don't believe there's a lot of heavy corruption in the state of Vermont, but there are, in fact, many, many questions being raised about the behavior of policymakers. Questions like, should a legislator turn around and become a lobbyist tomorrow? Should someone who works for the executive branch go to work for an industry that they had regulated? And I think what we need is an independent entity that could answer these questions and resolve them in a way that is unbiased and nonpartisan. The other thing that we have now is when these issues do arise, we have legislators or elected officials making determinations as to what should happen to other elected officials. And I don't think that makes a lot of sense. We saw what happened not too long ago when Attorney General Sorrell was asked to investigate himself because of some allegations of wrongdoing when it came to campaign finance laws. And I mean, that was maybe one example that is almost too ridiculous to talk about. But I think we need to have an independent commission that is truly independent, that can not only rule on these kinds of questions, but issue opinions that clarify wrong or clarify problems before they happen.
So in your mind, you were talking about legislators who then go to work for companies perhaps that they oversaw in perhaps leadership positions, or even state officials who go out one door and all of a sudden enter the door of the company that they were regulating. Do you think it's up to the legislature to put some waiting periods in place and then this ethics commission would enforce those?
Yes. And I don't know right now whether it should be a one-year waiting period or longer, but I think there needs to be a waiting period. It's what we call the revolving door, and we're all familiar with it. And I think there's a lot of people who get aggravated when they see that revolving door spinning too much. So I think we need to regulate it at some level and then have the Ethics Commission make sure that it's abided by.
Let's talk to Dina in Manchester Center. Hi, Dina. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Dina, hi, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Yes, hi. I really appreciate today's topic. I live in Manchester Center, Vermont. Recently moved back to Vermont. I lived in Oregon for 20 years and also worked in government. I believe Vermont does need an ethics commission, an independent body to help not just establish but keep a code of conduct in place. And I'm calling in to say I support that as a resident and a landowner in southern Vermont.
And Dina, you mentioned that Oregon had one in place. Do you know how those members were appointed?
You know, it's been a little while. I would have to go back and do a little research. I know Oregon was one of the first states to pass a law on the revolving door issue. And I believe in Oregon, I know it used to be a year minimum for most elected officials could not serve, you know, in a direct industry that they governed priorly. I just think what I'm seeing in Vermont, even being a very small state with good ethics, is that if you have an issue, for example, with land use, and you go to your local offices to talk about it, they already have an invested interest, so you really have no place else to go to if you think there's a conflict or an issue that's come up. You have no place other than the legislature, really, to go talk to someone and say, I want to point this out. Is there anything that can be done? And I think that's a breakdown in the system.
Okay, Dina, thanks very much for your phone call. Secretary Kondos, when you put out a press release earlier talking about your support and the need to have an ethics commission, you wrote, quote, recent events more than enough bear out the need for an ethics commission. I think it'd be helpful for our listeners to know what recent events. It'd be really good for them to hear some specifics of some activity that you think might have been a little questionable.
I would prefer not to talk about what those specific are because there is no ethics commission in place right now. There's no code of conduct technically in place. I mean, it's all been reported. We've all seen it. And I think there are cases where individuals will vote on something, and it can happen at the local level as well. And I want to really get down to the fact that this is, from my standpoint, this should be executive branch, legislative branch, as well as municipal. Because I think if you were to be sitting in our office at the Secretary of State's office, you would hear the many, many requests we get for clarification on what's going on at the municipal level as well. I'm not here to point fingers at anyone in particular. We need to look forward, and that's where any ethics commission we put in place is not going to be looking backward anyway. We're going to look forward from this point forward.
Senator Plino, we did get an email from Sue in Franklin County discussing the case of Franklin County Senator Norm McAllister, who's been charged with several counts of sexual assault. Sue would like to know, does the Senate have a process to remove Senator McAllister from office? And if that's not the case, she would like to know if this is the kind of example that an ethics commission would look at.
My understanding is that clearly this has not happened in the Senate before, and there are people who are looking into the possibility of a mechanism to allow the Senate to vote on whether or not to, I guess, eject Senator McAllister. So that's a little bit up in the air, but it is being looked at. In terms of an ethics commission, I think there's two answers to it. One is if this came in the form of a complaint to the ethics commission, I think two things would happen. One is the criminal parts of the allegation would be turned over to the attorney general's office, not dealt with by the ethics commission. Then the ethics commission can make a determination as to whether or not this was the kind of behavior that should result in a senator being ejected from the Senate. Having said that, we need to be clear that the Ethics Commission would not have the ability to directly make that happen. Under our Constitution, only the Senate and only the House can take those kinds of actions regarding their own members. What the Ethics Commission could do is recommend to the Senate that this Senator McAllister be ejected, but it would be up to the Senate to make that actual determination. And that's something that's in our Constitution, which you could argue is a failing that will make things a little more difficult for the Ethics Commission, but there's nothing we can do about that right now. They can make recommendations to the House and the Senate. House and the Senate have to then follow through.
Let's go back to our listeners and talk to Scott, who's calling from Pomfret. Hi, Scott. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Bob. Secretary Kondos, thank you for being on the panel as well as the rest of the panel. I'd like to applaud this effort. I think it's fantastic. And one of the major reasons is that often in the spirit of looking forward, towns can get twisted up in knots over some of these issues, which can lead to internal strife. And I think this would go a long ways to help refereeing or help resolving some of those kinds of conflicts that might otherwise get out of hand. So I think that's a really great potential upside of this. And I guess a question is, or maybe something that might be worth thought is, my experience has been that often towns, a lot of towns in Pomfret, a lot of towns throughout Vermont, rather, don't necessarily always have the expertise to navigate some of these issues. And so maybe there might be a need for not only the actual ethics commission part, but the training as well. And I wanted to see if that might be something that would be included as part of this idea.
Okay, Scott, thanks very much for your phone call. Representative Sherman, do you see this as a, we've been talking about members of the legislature, members of state government in the administration. Do you see a role here for the ethics commissions and these guidelines to deal with municipal and local officials as well?
I guess I'm not quite there yet. For a number of years now, I've been advocating for the creation of a code of conduct and it be consistent throughout legislators, statewide elected officials that we haven't spoken about, and appointed officials in the executive branch. And it's been a difficult road so far. So I want to make sure we can do. That's where my concern is, or that's where my I don't want to get bogged down in the municipal officials. I think a lot of towns are very small, and there are going to be conflicts, but hopefully those can be addressed in those smaller communities. I'd like to focus actually in Montpelier and not make it too big a bureaucracy. I don't want to create another bureaucracy with this, but I do think it's important that we have consistent codes of conduct for legislators, statewide elected officials, and appointed officials. So that's I'm concerned that if we make it too big, it's going to get weighted down, and nothing will pass.
Today in the program, we're looking at the possibility and proposed legislation to create an ethics commission in Vermont. Your thoughts? 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today, we're looking at the possibility of creating an ethics commission in Vermont. With us today, Stowe Representative Heidi Sherman, Washington County Senator Anthony Polina, and Secretary of State Jim Condos. Your thoughts about this? Does Vermont need this? And if you think so, tell us why. 1-800-639-2211. Secretary Condos, we got this email in, and Kathy emailed us. I heard that Phil Scott is trying to think of a way to put a firewall between him and his construction business if he runs for governor. Phil Scott has talked about that quite a bit this summer. Kathy writes, "It amazes me that a firewall like this is not considered necessary in his current position of lieutenant governor, even though his firm bids on state contracts. Yes, Vermont needs an ethics commission." Is that something that an ethics commission would look at?
Potentially. And I'm not going to point at any specific area, but really an ethics commission, aside from the definition, perhaps even helping to develop that definition with the legislature, will be the body that would receive, investigate, and adjudicate any kind of a violation or a complaint that is brought to them. It also could be, and in my vision, would be something that could help educate as well as provide advisory opinions. So if somebody has a situation like that, they could go to the Ethics Commission and say, "Here's my situation. How can I handle this?" and get an advisory opinion from them. And this is how some of the other states are set up to do this. It's really important that people have that ability. One thing I've learned since 2011 when I started the Vermont Transparency Tour, and I've done over 30 stops essentially where I educate the municipal officials on both open meeting law and on access to public records, is that there's a real void statewide on education, on providing the information. People are really trying to do the best they can, but they just don't understand what the laws are saying.
Let's go back to our listeners and talk to Lars, who's calling from Cabot. Hi, Lars. What's on your mind today?
Good afternoon, Bob. I really support this initiative and applaud our public leaders who are leading it, especially in this post-Citizens United age when we're seeing more out-of-state money influencing our campaigns and elections, for better or worse. The piece that I also think is really important here is the opportunity for closure when a public official may have had ethics charges brought against them, to be able to have their name cleared by an independent panel and then move on in a state where reputation is sort of the currency of the realm.
And Senator Plenty, you were talking about campaign finance enforcement, and the Ethics Commission could have a role in that.
I think the Ethics Commission would actually take over the role that's now played by the Attorney General's office. The Attorney General is an elected official, and we've had instances where a complaint is made during a campaign even, or leading up to a campaign or after a campaign, and it's made on behalf of a political party or a candidate, and you have an elected official investigating someone else who may be an elected official or involved in an election. And like it or not, I mean, we're a small state. We all know each other. We all have a sense of trust, but it just doesn't make sense to have one elected official investigating another. And I think what it does is it gets away from that and gets us and moves us away from the impression that everything is political. The Ethics Commission would be truly independent and would be able to answer these questions, create closure, but do it in a way that is nonpartisan and unbiased in any way. And I think that's really what we're looking for. Again, it's not huge corruption, but there's a lot of questions, and I don't want those questions answered by elected officials. I want those questions answered by people who are truly independent.
Let's talk to Rick, who's calling from South Burlington. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
Hello, everyone, and thank you to Anthony for just making the argument I was going to make. I support the effort to establish an ethics commission, and as an example of why you should consider having independent citizens in the middle of this, I would point to the Federal Election Commission in Washington. It arbitrates what goes on when there are conflicts of interest between Democrats and Republicans. It is absolutely impotent. It is not functioning. It's widely acknowledged to be almost laughable. And it's a stain on our democracy when we have commissions set up that are politically blocked from exercising or making decisions that are in the broad, greater public interest point of view. So hats off to Anthony and others that are pushing for that. I hope it makes it in.
All right. Rick, thanks for your phone call. Rick brings up a really important point. Who's going to be on this commission? How are these people going to be appointed? How do you make this certain that it doesn't turn into a political witch hunt? Representative Sherman, how does this commission get formed?
So I think we need to really explore what other states have done. I've had two different versions in my bills. One was an independent commission, because I agree with Anthony that it really does, it should be independent. I got some pushback on that. So the most recent bill, I ended up having appointees from the speaker and appointees from the president pro tem. But I think that needs to be a discussion. We really need to see what works best in some other states. A lot of them are, some of them are just, so there's a journalist or there's different professions and stuff that are represented, or people, again, very independent. But I think we need to look at other states and see what works best in some other states. I'm not quite sure, but we did get pushback after the first bill with an independent commission. But I agree with Anthony that I do think it needs to be an independent commission of sorts. And I will say I don't want to make it – we have a citizen legislature. So we need to also be very careful to establish this code of conduct and financial disclosures and this ethics commission so that it doesn't discourage people from running, that it doesn't prevent people who own a business from running for office. We need to establish, we need to be very careful and do it carefully and in a tripartisan way. I think we could do it here in Vermont, and we can, in fact, lead on this.
Secretary Kondos, how would you appoint members of this commission?
I've gone around. I've looked at, as Heidi said, I've looked at many of the states to see how they're set up. I guess I've kind of settled on an area where we would perhaps have the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court appoint the chair. You could then have the governor appoint the vice chair. You could have my office or the Attorney General's office appoint one more. And then you might go to the ACLU or the Vermont Press Association to get another look at it, to have a different way of looking at it. But it cannot be, for instance, we could not have a situation where the legislature makes all the appointments. That would not work, because then it doesn't appear to be independent. You've got to have a cross-section. I think in New Massachusetts, I think, which is the one I've looked at the most, they have the various elected officials appoint somebody, and they have ties to no more than a certain number from any one party. Obviously, we don't have party status here in Vermont unless you run as an elected official, but there's no registered Republicans or registered Democrats or registered progressives. But I do think that there has to be a way to make this thing, and I agree with Heidi completely, that we need to move forward cautiously, thoughtfully, and make sure that this ethics commission is, one, independent, that it has the resources it's going to need, and that it has the authority it's going to need.
Senator Plante, some people might be listening and thinking, what, the governors might have an appointment on this thing, and the Speaker of the House might have an appointment, the Senate President might have an appointment. This is starting to sound like it could be a very political ethics panel. How do you think it should be handled?
I think it should be more independent than that. I think not only should it be independent, meaning there's no elected officials on the commission, but I don't think the commission should be selected by elected officials either. So in the draft that I'm working on, there's five commission members, and they're appointed by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. One is appointed by the Press Association. One is appointed by the ACLU. One is appointed by the Human Rights Commission. And one is supported by another entity that I'm not remembering right now. But there are five of them that are all appointed and totally independently, so that they're not beholden to any other political leader or political party.
And in your mind, does this ethics commission have to, Secretary Kondos was talking about resources. I mean, is this a full-time group? Do they have staff?
Well, you know, we're going to figure that out as we go along. But I think the honest answer is, if we're going to do it right, it has to be full-time and it has to have staff. And I'll paint you one quick picture, because I'm not committed to it at all, but there needs to be an executive director who runs the commission. There needs to be an investigator who investigates all these things that we're talking about. And then there would need to be a prosecutor of sorts, so that if one of these allegations actually goes into what would essentially be a trial before the commission, that there's a prosecutor to help prosecute the case. So I see it as having three staff people. I don't see it as straining the state budget. We don't want to do that. But it has to be large enough to be able to do its job, and we have to see it as an investment in democracy and in good government, one that will pay off down the road by making people feel more secure about the decisions that are being made and about the democracy that we need to strengthen.
Let's go back to our listeners and talk to Julia, who is calling from Chittenden. Hey, Julia, welcome to the program.
Hello. Well, thank you. Thanks for taking my call. I think it's a terrific idea, because I am a Vermont native. I moved back here in 2002 from many years away. And, you know, Vermont has a very strong good old boy network that's operating on all levels all the time. So I'm glad to see that this is finally being recognized. Just what one of the previous speakers was talking about in terms of who makes appointments, I fully endorse that. It should not smack of political interest whatsoever. And he mentioned the Supreme Court judge making an appointment, which brings me to my question. Would, as appointed officials, would judges, like on the county level, be included under the purview of the Ethics Commission? Because I know from personal experience and other people that I know, on the county level, you have, you know, the shire towns, and you have the judges who are ensconced in those shire towns, and the people they know, you know, they know a wide network of people. So if somebody comes in and has a complaint about someone who's a friend of theirs or someone they know, which happened to me, they don't necessarily recuse themselves, and at that point, your only recourse is to go to the Bar Association's Misconduct Board and see what that board's going to do. And, you know, that board's probably reluctant to string up one of their own.
Okay, so Julia, let's see if we can get an answer for you. Secretary Kondos, what about judges?
Well, we're going to have to be careful around the Constitution. The judiciary has kind of their own separate rules and laws that they follow. I you know, off the top of my head, I don't know. I was not contemplating them being part of this, because they do have their own. I do believe, though, that it should be during this discussion, they should review it, because if you looked at that Center for Public Integrity ranking from 2012, one of the things that Vermont gets an F on, aside from a legislative accountability and ethics accountability enforcement, is judicial accountability. So I think there is room to be looked at there, but that's not what the focus of the Ethics Commission would be at this point.
Let's talk to Larry in Greensboro. Hi, Larry. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Glad to be here. Interesting show. A lot of good comments. I thought it was going to be boring, but it's turned out to be very interesting. So similar to Julia's comment about judges, mine is about town clerks. You know, there's no, there's not a lot of accountability. And if there's an issue, how do you do that without, you know, they're your neighbors and there's a lot of, you know, is the good old boy stuff, but a lot of the town clerks are women, and so it's more of a that issue going on. There's no term limits. So if there's an issue, how can you, without incriminating yourself, put a complaint against somebody? I've seen town clerks where they have their husbands, you know, who were loggers when there was an appropriate, like, logging situation set up where it would be sustainable. Said, well, if you really want to make some money, have my husband do it. And it's, like, totally inappropriate.
Okay, Larry, thanks very much for your phone call. Senator Polina, do you think that under your version of the bill, would there be a local element to it?
Well, first let me back up and say that there are some constitutional problems with bringing the judiciary branch into the Ethics Commission, so that's something that we have to be aware of. I want us to find a way to kind of ease the commission into dealing with local and municipal issues. I think that there are a lot of them out there. I think that, frankly, they could overwhelm the commission if they all were to come in, you know, if we just opened the door. So I think that I would like to be able to have the commission issue advisory opinions around some of these local municipal issues. I'm honestly not sure how much further to take it in the initial stages. I think down the road, municipalities would be covered, yes. But you just asked me before about the staffing and the kind of resources that would go into such a commission. So I think we start with the legislative and executive branch, and then we see what we can do in terms of covering the municipalities and local officials, which I think should be covered. But I think we have to make sure that we have the resources and the ability to do it in a way that is fair and sensible.
Representative Sherman, you talked about introducing this legislation previously. It did not get passed. As we entered the 2016 legislative session, what do you think the chances are for the bill this year?
Again, I think if we carefully construct it, I think if we bring people in, obviously we're of three different parties, essentially. If we bring people together and really talk about it, I think there's a real possibility. The recent news stories that have been reported, in addition to all of the comments made by a number of leaders and elected officials, I think there's a good chance. I will say, though, I think we need to be very careful about making this too big of a bureaucracy. I'm cautious. I understand what Anthony wants to do, but I am very cautious about making this. I'm very hesitant about making this full-time with three staff people and what have you. I don't know where that... I do think they need to be, they need to have their resources. I do think we need to make sure they have the power to do what we ask them to do and the authority. But I think we might get bogged down again if we try to create too big of an entity from the beginning. But I do think it needs to happen, and I think we have the support out there.
We have about a minute left, Secretary.
I think that we do have broad support, and I do believe. You know, I know I've spoken with House Speaker Shap Smith about this, and he is supportive. Obviously, he says the devil's in the details, and I think we would all agree with that. We have to work those details out, but I do think there is broad support, and I think that the legislature will take a look at this coming session.
Is there support in the Senate?
Yes, and I think it's an idea whose time has come. I think that the citizens are ready for it, and I think a lot of policymakers are ready for it, too, because we'd like to get beyond the questions and actually have an entity that could help us resolve these questions in a way, as I mentioned before, is reasonable and fair. So I think there is growing support. Just ask your listeners.
Well, our listeners seem to be very interested in this subject. Be fascinating to see how this plan is received by lawmakers during the 2016 session. Many thanks to our guests today, Stowe Representative Heidi Sherman, Washington County Senator Anthony Polina, and Secretary of State Jim Condos. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
Coming up next, I'll talk with 7 Days columnist Paul Heintz about the latest developments in Vermont's 2016 gubernatorial race. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Campaign 2016 officially started this week when House Speaker Shap Smith announced that he's a candidate for the Democratic nomination for governor.
Our state government needs to be an active partner in supporting vibrant and livable downtowns, because we know that strengthening local communities is the key to our success. And I am committed to being a governor who listens, learns, and leads in partnership with Vermonters every single day.
As Smith enters this race, there are also several other candidates taking a serious look at running for governor. How is this race shaping up more than a year before the primary election? With us now to help us better understand the political landscape in Vermont is Paul Heintz, a columnist and a reporter for 7 Days. Hey, Paul, great to have you on the program today.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
So, Paul, House Speaker Shap Smith is the first to enter the gubernatorial race, but certainly not the last. We'll look at some of the other candidates in just a moment. But what do you think some of the major challenges are facing Shap Smith?
Well, Speaker Smith brings a lot to the table. He's very well known and well respected within the State House. At his announcement earlier this week, we saw dozens of other House members standing by his side, lending their support to his campaign. He's somebody who has a record to run on, and I think that he is viewed favorably by many members of the Democratic establishment. Of course, all that comes with some downsides. There's no question that because he's got a record to run on, he's got a record that opponents can point to criticize him. So he will have to answer for some tough votes over the years. He's also probably not quite as well known outside of the State House as those who have run for statewide office before. He represents a relatively small House district in Lamoille County, so his name recognition may not be super high outside of his hometown. But I think he's definitely going to be a formidable candidate. I think that he'll probably be able to raise a fair amount of money, and I think that he's definitely someone to watch in this race.
And you talk about his record. Is Shap going to be in the position where he needs to defend the actions of the legislature on a variety of different issues? I'm thinking of things now like the education reform bill. They didn't do a whole lot on health care reform or on property tax reform. Is Shap now accountable for all of this?
He is, certainly. And what he says and how he addressed that at his announcement is that he's been in the game. He's actually had to make tough decisions, and therefore he has to answer for those decisions. So I think you're going to see this in the general election. We already see Republicans equating him with incumbent Governor Peter Shumlin, saying that he's basically going to be the second coming of Peter Shumlin, who has obviously lost some popularity in the last few years. But we're also going to see this in the primary election. I think we're going to see at least one of his opponents running as an outsider. That's Matt Dunn, who does not have a recent legislative record to have to answer for.
Matt Dunn is a former senator from Windsor County. He now works for Google as their community affairs director. He ran for governor in 2010, lost in that five-way race that was won by Peter Shumlin. Now, Dunn has raised more than $100,000 so far, and yet he says he's not sure if he's going to run for governor in 2016. So to help him make a decision, he's going on a listening tour of all of Vermont's 14 counties to learn more about the concerns of Vermonters. Is there any question in your mind that Matt Dunn is running for governor?
There's no question in my mind, at least, that Matt Dunn is running for governor. He's someone who actually was thinking about running for governor even before Governor Shumlin decided not to seek re-election. He was the only prospective candidate to raise a significant amount of money this past filing period, and that really demonstrated that he's a serious candidate. And he has had a number of supporters in recent days send emails around to reporters and other insiders saying, this is why I support Matt Dunn for governor. So certainly he is putting off a formal announcement until September, it seems like. But there's no doubt in my mind that he's going to run for governor.
So what are some of Dunn's strengths and perhaps weaknesses?
Well, I think that if we buy the assumption that people are frustrated with the incumbent governor, with state house politics in general, his ability to run as an outsider is a real strength. His ability to point to his day job at Google and say, hey, I'm a guy who actually understands technology, it's probably a helpful selling point when much of the discussion may still be around Vermont Health Connect and the technological failings that we've seen there. So I think he's going to run as the outsider. He can use that in the primary election. He might be able to use that in the general election as well. And I think that could serve him well.
Now, another person who is looking at this race is Transportation Secretary Sue Minter. A number of people, including former Governor Madeline Cunin, are encouraging her to run. In the end, do you think she will?
It's really hard to say at this point. I think Secretary Minter has been less vocal about her plans than most of the other prospective candidates. And that's partially because, as a member of the cabinet, she's really restricted in what she can say. She can't engage in too much obvious political behavior at this point. She can't be out there raising money. So at some point, she's going to have to make a decision about whether she's serious about running. At that point, she'll have to resign from the cabinet and start full-time, or she may pass it up. She seems to enjoy her current job. Another possibility is that she could potentially run for lieutenant governor.
Let's look at the Republican side. It's no secret that Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott is a likely candidate. He's raising money, but he says that doesn't necessarily mean he's running for governor. He might be seeking re-election as lieutenant governor. What about Phil Scott? Is he a likely candidate?
Well, I think it's the same answer as with Matt Dunn. There are certain things you don't really do unless you're serious about running. And one of those is sending out a massive fundraising mailing in an odd year of the election cycle. So that indicates to me that he is looking very, very seriously at running in this race. He has told a number of reporters that the thing he's working on right now is trying to find a plan for the construction business he runs so that he can step away from it as he runs for election and if he wins for the period during which he serves. I think that he's getting a lot of pressure within the Vermont Republican Party and possibly from national Republican groups to run. He's viewed as the strongest Republican candidate, and I do believe that he will end up running.
Now, Paul, there are some other people thinking about jumping into the GOP race, most notably Bruce Lissman, one of the co-founders of the Campaign for Vermont. Lissman said this week that the chances of his running for governor are stronger now than a month ago. But he was not willing to address if he would run as a Republican or an independent. So do you think he's going to run? And if he does, will he run as a Republican?
It's very difficult to answer either of those questions. Bruce Lissman is somebody who got involved in Vermont politics several years ago and has appeared interested in running for governor for quite some time. That said, he's never quite pulled the trigger. He has given both to Republicans and to Democrats in the past. He has fashioned himself as a centrist, not someone who's beholden to either party. But I think most people view him as more aligned with the Republican Party. He has been kind of a voice of opposition to Governor Shumlin over the years. Now, if he runs as an independent, I think that really complicates things for Lieutenant Governor Scott should Scott run for governor. I think it's quite likely that any traction that Lissman gets comes at the expense of Phil Scott. Again, presuming that Scott gets into the race. So I think many Republicans would like to see Lissman either not run or run in the Republican primary and then make sure that the Republicans are aligned against the Democrats without splintering their vote.
Let's look at the Progressive Party. They supported Peter Shumlin for his three elections, but they made it very clear they would not back him again after he dropped his support for a single-payer health care plan. How likely is it that the progressives would run their own candidate for governor, or is there a Democratic candidate that they could support next year?
Well, they're certainly talking a big game about running a candidate. Back in 2010, as you recall, what they basically said was if the Democrats nominate someone who's fairly liberal and supports certain key causes, they would not run a candidate and therefore create a spoiler situation as had happened in previous years. That worked out very well for Governor Shumlin. He narrowly won that year after receiving some progressive support. And progressives say, well, we've learned our lesson. We can't trust Democrats to really go to bat for our priorities. So they seem to want to field a candidate. Now, the tough thing for progressives is there are not too many very obvious statewide candidates who could fare well. They have a few members of the legislature, but very few of those seem to want to sacrifice the seats that they have in order to run what would likely be an uphill race.
It's going to be a fascinating campaign year in Vermont because there could easily be three open statewide seats for governor, for lieutenant governor, and for attorney general. Paul Heintz of 7 Days, many thanks for being on the program today.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
That is our program for today. Earlier this year, Vermont students took the new Smarter Balance test. On Monday, we'll get the results and we'll talk to Education Secretary Rebecca Holcomb about what those tests tell us about Vermont schools. Send your comments to vermontedition@vpr.net and tune in Monday at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels, Rick Sangari, and Sam Gail Rosen with production assistance from Sarah Matthews. Liam Connors directed the program. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.